Hi, everybody. This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicles, Stories of the Supernatural. How y'all doing today? And today I have a fantastic guest by the name of Remzo Martinez. Okay, and Remzo is a political commentator. He's a campaign consultant and multimedia producer living in the D.C. area. And he's best known for his podcast, The Remzo Republic, which reaches thousands of listeners each episode across many on-demand platforms and networks. However, the reason why I have delighted to have Remzo on the show is that he is now doing something called Haunted Republic. And I'm gonna bring him on in just a second, but it's one of those situations where somebody goes into the so-called haunted place and finds out that it's for real. So how are you doing today, Remzo?
I am doing outstanding. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
No, likewise. Absolutely. You know, and we spoke real quick before, you know, we started recording, and and I know that you went on that that you accompanied a ghost hunting team to St. Albans, and this is in Virginia, right? But before we get into that, let me ask you something. Had you ever had any type of paranormal experience when you were younger, even if you didn't recognize it as such? You know how sometimes in hindsight you think back.
Perhaps. I mean, with an untrained eye specifically, I mean, there are definitely parts of my life where I could say, oh, maybe something strange that happened is paranormal, and vice versa. So I always had a healthy skepticism as a child and teenager, but it wasn't until about probably a year ago that I began to, you know, become more in tune with this type of stuff, begin to, you know, widen my worldview and begin to question whether or not this was something that is capable of occurring. So, yeah, I mean, there were just some things growing. I'll joke with my family. I'm like, hey, you think that thing that happens is really what we think it is, or is it something else? But it was always, you know, it was always kind of a running joke. It wasn't necessarily
it doesn't sound like something that really scared you, that you were like, oh God. And it was just something that could have been either or, you know, it's like, okay. So then let's fast forward to, you said what, a year ago, and you decided then to go.
So it's such a weird story. I mean, it's
weird is good. Weird is good.
Yeah. Weird is fun, and weird is what, you know, makes Haunted Republic so appealing to people. But about a year ago, my brother and my father decided to go together to a place called Trans-Allegheny in Pennsylvania. While they were there, they were saying, hey, I caught stuff on an EVP, I caught stuff on video, and I'm just like, okay, you two are obviously, you know, where's Ashton Kutcher? And, you know, I was just not interested in that stuff at all. I was finishing off my undergrad at Liberty University, and, you know, they began to get a little bit more into it. We started watching, you know, Destination America, a.k.a. the Ghost and Barbecue channel on TV. And, you know, it just became one of those things that we, you know, slowly began to get more interested in. And then over the summer, we were watching some show in the basement of our house. My brother, who also is the producer of the show, we were just talking, and we were like, you know, we could do a program that is so much better than half the stuff on TV. It seems everyone and their cousin seems to be getting a show. And I think not only we could produce something that's better, but we could, you know, actually do a much more thorough investigation, because my brother is a, you know, state-of-the-art multimedia producer, and I'm an investigative journalist. So we were going into this type of thing, like, you know, we could come at it with a completely different lens, because it seems like everything that goes bump in the night happens to be a ghost in one of these shows. So we went into Haunted Republic from more of a, you know, let's actually do an actual investigation. Let's not go out to prove our bias, but let's go out and, you know, let's be scientific. Let's be rational about what's going on. And let's just see what we can find. Let's just try and, you know, have fun with the process. And if we catch anything, great. If we don't catch anything, it'll be a good story, because we want to be a storyteller in the process.
Sure.
So we had, you know, looked around, and we wanted to find a way that could, you know, easily kind of take it.
I hope I did not lose him. Oh, Remzo.
It's like, oh, well, I'm going to go and try and get like the regular experience. I want to go on the tour, but I also want to go for one of these organizations, because either two things are going to happen. I'm going to prove that they've actually caught phenomenons that will absolutely change your life.
Right.
Or the greatest scammers today. So that's what kind of led to it. And after that point, we were like, okay, let's just go ahead and find something. And boop, it was St. Albans. That was the next opportunity coming up in about a month.
Okay.
It took 30 days to pitch it to a couple sponsors and co-producers. And we were like, okay, how are we going to do this? And, you know, everything else is history, essentially. Our first film came out about a month later after that investigation.
So what happened? How do we say behind the scenes? Because I know that when you produce something, you know, there's editing and everything. But what happened to you personally behind the scenes that made you think twice about the possibility that the paranormal's real?
It was, I think we were pretty good in the film at capturing our real-time reactions. I mean, I had to bleep out and silence the parts where I'm saying, like, oh, crap. Like, the G-rated version. I was looking at my brother like, holy fudge, that is insane. And, you know, that happened. But, you know, we had over 8 hours of footage that we had to condense into about an hour-long film. Yeah. There were just certain parts because we had no idea what we were anticipating. You know, we didn't have any night vision equipment. We really, like, filmed on the spot with a couple Canon Rebel cameras, an iPhone, and an old little silver Kodak. So we didn't really, I mean, we didn't really anticipate, you know, this being what it ended up being. We put together what was, a pretty quality film. It had its faults, but we were just kind of winging it the entire time. And there's so much off camera that we were not able to catch.
Mm-hmm.
There was an incident on a, you know, towards the end of the night there that I explained on an episode of Jim Harold's Campfire, which was just, you know, probably the most surreal experience for me. It was when we came in what I assume in contact was with a demonic entity. And that was probably the part of the night where I'm like, okay, I need a cold shower and some sleep because this is some trippy nonsense going on here.
I want to interrupt you. Why would you consider demonic versus just a ghost? What happened? Because that sounds pretty scary. What happened? If
there's such a wide range of emotions that you encounter when you're going through an experience like that, whether or not you're coming at it from a biblical worldview where you understand there are multiple tiers of reality, or if you're coming at it from a secular worldview where everything is kind of occurring at once, you know, you have a linear existence, so to speak.
Right.
With that night, I had felt such a wide range of emotions. What we encountered throughout the film, and you see this, were some things that we believe were residual energy. There were other parts where we were dealing with entities which we do believe were sentient, but at no part in the film, as you'll see if you go watch it, were Ryan and I necessarily scared of what we were dealing with. The difference between all of those encounters versus what happened to me in the boiler room of St. Albans Sanatorium was I did believe that I was in, a potential situation for physical harm.
Okay.
And that danger aspect, the malevolence and evil that you begin to feel is what, you know, I began.
Yes, there we go. There we go. And that's exactly what I wanted to know. Like, yeah, like what you just said, that all of a sudden the feeling, it's different where, you know, you feel, like you said, which is a very accurate word, the malevolence. It's not like, it's just scary because, okay, you're in a dark place running around with cameras, where all of a sudden, and you feel on a personal level, absolutely. I know what you're talking about there. There's a difference when you encounter something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I hope I wasn't, you know, sounding like I was kind of bullshitting you, being all wordy like that. But, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I cursed. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's so surreal. It's kind of like people that go, you know, they do like running with the bulls or something, or they jump out of an airplane. It's such a rush. And it's so easy to be caught up in things, but it was, I mean, there are just certain things in life that you don't forget.
Right.
And that was one of those things where it's like, it definitely left a, you know, an emotional imprint, so to speak.
And you know what you described where, like, you know, that you guys went in there with a couple of cameras and iPhones and everything. And personally, because like I told you before, since I've been doing this for a long time, you know, I was doing stuff like this before the advent of so many gadgets. And I'll tell you, for all the, how can I say, the use that people think of as far as to duplicate it or capture it, it draws you away because you're trying to juggle all this equipment sometimes, even though some of them you can leave it running, that it actually takes you away from the actual experience itself. So, and in my opinion, having a couple of cameras and your iPhones and basically your senses is sometimes the best way to experience something of that nature.
Definitely. I mean, and maybe I'm just naive, but, you know, I'm also a bit of an egoist. I do think that what I was able to put out in that first film is mm-hmm. better than half the stuff you'll see on History Channel, mm-hmm. Discovery, Travel, in our subsequent films that we've put out recently, since we've been able to upgrade, since we've been able to learn, you know, some of the flaws of the first film. Sure. I'd say that we have drastically improved our quality and our knowledge of how to not just, you know, conduct an investigation, but, you know, how do I get this angle? How am I going to make sure that the lighting is good? How do I make sure that I'm not bringing too much stuff in necessarily? Okay. So I definitely think that I've been able to promote something which I call guerrilla journalism, mm-hmm. which is where you make sure that you don't have necessarily all the bells and whistles, but you make sure you have the best quality stuff for that sure. moment. You're applying just the amount of, you know, technology and the amount of attention you need just for something that it requires, and you're not going overboard necessarily. Sure. And I'm hoping that what this film shows is that, you know, and St. Albans was done on a budget of $500. Most of that went towards Burger King and hotels. But I mean, because we had to get down there.
Sure, and, of course.
You know, I was able to put that out. It's reached, you know, over 1,000 people on Facebook, you know, several thousand more people online. It was a runaway hit. I was on, you know, numerous radio shows and podcasts and, you know, programs like yours because of it. And it's because people were able to see it and they're like, oh my gosh, what did this fool do? And what I did was I put out something that was good. Right. And, you know, it's pretty crazy when I'm getting phone calls from people I graduated from Liberty University with who I haven't spoken to in months. And they're like, Remso, what's up? And I'm like, how the hell did you get my number? And the first thing they're asking me is, hey, I've got a question about that Honda Republic.
It's like, yeah, I haven't talked to you till now, but weird. Guess what?
What do you want from me? Gosh, pay up first.
But let me ask something, Remso. And this is something that I guess what I'm trying to say is you can't quantify it. Because there was no machine or anything to capture it. But you said that you had this feeling. Like, how do you know? The only one really that understood it was you. Because you were inside of your skin. Once you had that experience, and I'm going to say, it sounds like you had a variety of them. But let's say that one that you described in the boiler room.
The demonic one.
Right, that you said, yeah. That imprinted in me like, and like I said, there's no way for you to prove it. This was something that you experienced. How do you think that that experience affects you now for all the projects that you did afterwards as far as your approach to other investigations?
I was a lot more closed-minded when it comes to the opinions of others.
Okay.
And I don't think until you're in a position yourself where you're the only person that has encountered something, mm-hmm. do you really begin to develop the empathy towards the experience of others that you need to be a lot more open-minded when you're conducting an investigation. And, you know, I was touched. Okay. I encountered, you know, a moment where I felt like the EVP reader, I'm sorry, where the EMF reader I had turned mm-hmm. into like what I can only equate to like, you know, touching a really hot park bench. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I felt like I was about to get branded by that.
Okay.
I mean, you feel your skin crawl in a literal sense. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a grown freaking man. I didn't want to puke in front of a bunch of people, but that ended up being something that was going through my mind. I'm like, oh, crap, this is about to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, having that experience, it's almost like knowing your limits emotionally,
Yes.
physically, spiritually. Once you begin to test those waters, you become a bit more gutsy. I didn't want to turn into a Zach from, Ghost
Yes,
Adventures,
I know
but
what you mean.
I've done some stupid stuff. I never set a Ouija board on fire, touched the Annabelle doll, but I've agitated spirits for the sake of getting something on camera. I have. I learned that you shouldn't do that because bad stuff will happen. You begin to, not necessarily let that fear begin to drive you, because ultimately what you need to understand is that if you're going out there to document something, you should show what happens instead of forcing something to happen.
Absolutely,
And
yes.
definitely St. Albans pushed my limits and showed me my comfort zone and showed me where I was not comfortable. And if it weren't for that, we definitely would have not had the success we've had with the next installments of that program.
Okay. And because I guess let me ask you, considering that experience that you have, do you think it's wise? And like you said, I'm sure you've seen shows, not all of them, but where somebody in there goes in there and provokes spirits, whether they're there or not. I'm not saying, but that are supposedly, in other words, they want that confrontation. Do you think that's a wise move?
No, not at
Okay.
all. It's like, I don't want to sound like super millennial on you, but do you know
Go
who Harambe
ahead.
is?
Go
You know who
ahead.
Harambe is? Do you know Harambe?
Yes.
Yeah, well, did Harambe really deserve to die? I mean, after all, it's that kid's fault. I mean, come on. That
You
kid's
know
gonna go ahead
what?
and crawl into that gorilla exhibit and not expect something to happen. I'm not saying I was a genius when I was 5 or 6, but I knew don't crawl into the freaking gorilla.
You know what? Well, you and I remember when that debate came up, that the thing with Harambe, and that my understanding was that the kid had fallen in, which can happen. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, of course the mother wants you to think that. She doesn't want to admit to the world that her kid
Okay.
was a moron.
Let me tell you something. And how can I say it? Let's go with the theory that he fell. Whatever,
Allegedly.
let's
Okay.
and you know what? I remember that there was, and I'm an animal lover, big time animal lover. I love animals. But I remember there was a debate after he got shot, and I was thinking, at the end of the day, as painful as it was, to me, a child's life is more important than an animal, regardless of how the poor kid ended up in there. You know what I'm saying? Whether
Oh,
the mother was
this is perfect
careless
though.
or the
This is
kid.
perfect though, because I completely agree with you. I would have shot the gorilla. It's just a gorilla. It is a kid. It is a human being.
Right,
Humans are
exactly.
above
I
animals.
wouldn't have been
But at the same
callous about it though. It would have taken like, I mean, let's considering that, hey, you either got to make a decision or maybe get to see this kid get his head bashed against the wall. You
Yeah.
can't just like debate about it, but I wouldn't have been callous about it either, but at the end of the day, a human life is a human life, so
Yeah, and
yeah.
I was joking around a moment ago, but those are like some legitimate things I heard online. It's like, oh,
Oh
Harambe wouldn't do that. It's like, you don't freaking know him. Harambe was a gorilla. Gorillas do gorilla stuff, okay? So
yes.
let's not, try and personalize this. Let's not get super emotional about it. I'd shoot the gorilla myself. I've actually publicly stated to SeaWorld I'm willing to shoot Shamu if they actually need it done one day. Like, I'm totally game for that. But when you poke a bear, it's gonna do bear stuff. It's gonna
Oh,
maul your face. It's gonna
sure.
eat your children. It's not gonna be cool. So,
But you know what? Some people have a hard time. But see, but you're there. You're describing when you actually physically see what it is that you're provoking or confronting or, like you said, poking. But in the case of some of these shows, some of them maybe all they're confronting is thin air for all we know because we're not there. But in the case of like what that experience that you had, where you really don't have a physical form, and it kind of diminishes the danger, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Where that's why I asked you what you thought about people that go in there and they provoke, because one, they're foolish, or two, they're desperate for some type of something to happen,
Yes.
even though it might be more than they bargained for later on. So.
Yeah, I think it has to do with, are you coming into it with a position of respect? I think that has a lot to do with it because, I think a lot of these things is a cautionary or corollary. If you go in somewhere and you're burning a Ouija board, like, expect weird stuff to happen. It's like, oh, I didn't think my car was going to turn into like a giant, death ball of fire when I poured all that gasoline on it and threw a match. It's like, you should pretty much expect that to happen. If you go into it with no respect, if you go into it with no knowledge, and I came into everything kind of, as a newbie because I thought, hey, this is the experience of
So you did
of
that?
my average listener. Well, no, I mean, I Googled stuff. As a good millennial, I went ahead and Googled stuff. I learned, hey, what should I do? What should I not do? So I had an idea of, okay, if I'm going to go into this as a professional investigator, what should I know? If I'm going to go into this as, one of these ghost hunters or something, what should I know? So I went into everything with a healthy degree of skepticism and respect as well, because I don't know what I'm going to find. If I
There's
went in there automatically thinking, oh, I'm going to find something or I'm not going to find something, I'm already leading into one preconceived notion or another.
Okay. So, are you planning to, I mean, is your the direction that you're going to go into, is it going to be more places like St. Albans as far as historical locations, or what is it, what kind of sites are you interested in going to investigate?
I was a blogger for a while before I got into the whole journalism thing. And the biggest thing that I began to realize was, you got to go where the story is. And I will go where I believe there's a good story, whether it's someone's basement or the Amityville Horror House. If there's something that goes bump in the night and I think I could get a good story out of it one way or another, I'll go there. So I'm an equal opportunist. We've investigated churches, battlegrounds, bridges, St. Albans. We're about to go, this is a bit of a teaser, so I'll go ahead and announce this on your show.
Go
We're
right
about
ahead.
to go, we're about to go investigate a winery.
Really?
Yeah, so
Oh.
instantly I'm excited for that, but probably for a different reason, but
What? Okay.
it's
Because
gonna
of
be
the, you're gonna investigate the spirits or the spirit. Okay.
both.
Both.
Both. The spirits and the spirits.
So.
The benevolent and the malevolent.
And the malevolent. Okay, depends on which side of that equation you want to put that on. But okay, next.
The benevolent spirits will probably come the next day, not during the investigation. Unless people want to, if someone wants to donate like a crap ton of money, I will actually do an investigation while drinking. I'm open to the idea.
Oh,
That'll
let me tell
be
you
interesting.
something. You'll either have incredible results or you'll wake up with one big headache behind in the grass somewhere. One of those two things. Let me, and what is that? Does the winery have a reputation of being haunted, or is this something that they just came across recently?
It's been haunted since they started, and
Oh,
these are
really?
people that they wanna operate a business. So if they are being told, hey, there's a guy floating on a camera and the guests see that, obviously that's not very good for business. So
Sure. And this is the thing, because sometimes especially when it comes to businesses, sometimes they've experienced things for years, but they're kind of hesitant. They kind of like either like write it off or live with it, but it comes to the point when they finally reach out or they allow somebody to come in there. Sometimes there's a precipitating event where they say, okay, this is it. We're done with this. Is that what happened to this location?
We're kind of like, and I don't want to sound super satirical, but we're kind of like Ghostbusters. I mean, we haven't actually had too many people reach out to us specifically, but when people have reached out to us, like, crap has hit the fan.
Okay,
Like,
there you go.
people are ready to quit. Sales are down.
Yes,
People
okay.
are afraid to go to their business. I mean, it's we go in, and what we want people to have is a peace of mind, because the show has not just become, an entertainment source for some people, an extra source of revenue and attention for my brother and I and our team. But I feel that has a purpose,
Okay.
because on several occasions we've been able to go places where there's a story that you don't know
Okay.
until you've conducted your investigation, you're sitting down with someone, and you're okay, this is what I found. You fill in the rest, and you figure out, oh my gosh, that's my friend that you encountered who died. Or, oh my gosh, I had that
Yes.
happen. I didn't tell you that. Life is is an experience itself. And, you know, when you begin to understand that a lot of things are interconnected, I'm a big proponent of free will, but I do believe that there's, there are certain roads that we have to cross at certain points that intersect with other people. And I think that Honda's Republic serves the purpose of also giving people some peace of mind sometimes, whether it's good or bad, whether it's we catch something or don't. I could tell you, honestly, of all the investigations we've conducted, I've never been to a place that was not haunted. I've had places that have different levels of experiences and different levels of activity, but so far we've been very selective as to the locations we go. And obviously it's gonna be bad if we don't catch something, but I've always been open to the fact of if even you think there might be something there, let's go there and do an investigation. So when that happens, I will gladly put out the investigation, an episode where we didn't catch anything. But we're about 4 or 5 episodes in right now. And so far it's just been, it's been a crazy train. That's the way to put it.
Let me ask you, do you have a team that goes there, or do you hook up with a team that's working out of that area where you're going to? How are you working that?
It's the core team is my brother and I. Depending on availability of others, we do have some friends and some people that we know in the field that come with us. So it depends on time and location. Each film we've had different people come. In the second episode, which is a Patreon exclusive episode in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, my father, Remso Sr., was part of it. Yeah, so my dad was part of the sequel, Haunted Republic Suicide Bridge. In our last public episode, which was our Halloween special, Haunted Republic Behind Bars. You can catch all of this on Facebook, YouTube, and our Patreon stuff is on their Patreon account, www.patreon.com/RemsoRepublic. You had actually the first boss that Ryan and I had together as a team. He was running for House of Delegates here in Virginia, and we were like, hey, man, you're going to come with us. So we had our old boss and our best friend Brian come down. We had one of the guys from one of the podcasts that we produced, Jason Carrier. Him and his wife came down for that one. And then for the third, I'm sorry, for the fourth episode, which comes out this week, Haunted Republic: The Visitors, we had one of my friends from the Army, Mike Amaral, come out. Have my girlfriend come too, except at one point she was like, this stuff is too crazy, and she left and she took the car and my wallet. But it's been fun each time. We always get people to come in, and we've had people that believe in it, and we have people that are like, this is crap. And at the end of the night, they're like, holy crap, this is real. So it's so much fun to have people that just want to enjoy the process. And I think that's where so many people get lost. And I want to sound respectful to the others that put out content for paranormal shows and stuff like that. They're all very good-hearted people, but some of their stuff is just crap. It's like, if you don't show the process, if you don't show how it was done, and if you're going into everything as one absolute suicide game or another, where it's like you have to catch something or you don't have to catch something, the process is gone. The story itself is skewed. You have nothing to show other than good intentions, and no one gets anywhere by good intentions alone.
Well, and this is one of the things that, a lot of times I want to say is a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Sometimes too
Sensitive.
rehearsed, for lack of a better word, is that you'll go to certain places that are reputed to be haunted supposedly by this person or this, whatever. And that's who they come up with. And if you've ever done this for a while, you really don't know sometimes who's going to show up and you're going to capture evidence on. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the person or the thing or whatever that is supposedly attached to that, because the supernatural is not an on-demand thing, and you just never know which player is going to stroll,
It's not a video game where you could just pick up somebody else's profile, press load, and then enter the middle of the game. It's like building Legos. You have to start from the first block and work upwards.
And you always have
I
to leave
mean,
it
it's
open for like you said, the surprise element of this is not what I was expecting, but let's go with it because this is what it is. And I think that's a lot more authentic and genuine, especially when, like you said, when there's so many shows out there that are kind of a little bit too, like already where it's going to end up at. When you start seeing the unexpected, like, hey, or and like as you said, very importantly, that the process, you actually show the process of how or what happened while you were there.
Yeah, I have many people who are part of our Patreon program who have seen every episode, both the public and the exclusive episodes of Haunted Republic. And the one thing we always get is, wow, you do not know how these episodes are going to end. I mean,
Sure.
this is such a raw story, and
Exactly.
we capture as much as we possibly can. It's such a raw story, and we try and make it an immersive experience.
Sure.
You never know how it's going to end. And
Well,
that's
and
just how it ends up. I mean, we don't take it that way. We just let the camera roll. And it's kind of like writing a
exactly.
book. Once you start to get in the groove, the book writes itself, so to speak.
Yes. And you know what? You made a very good point there that besides the obvious, which is I'm hoping we're going to capture, record somehow or other some type of paranormal event or entity, I think it's also when you see that the people that are there, that their reactions are genuine. And you know what I mean by that, right? That.
Yeah, if you see a grown man say, "Oh my gosh, I almost crapped myself," like that's as genuine as you're gonna get.
Okay. Well, and you know what? I guess after a while you could tell when somebody their reaction is really spontaneous, like this person is either really scared or they're like that. I think that's very engaging, especially nowadays where sometimes you kind of can foresee what the next reaction is going to be.
I could tell you a quick story real
Oh,
fast.
absolutely. Take your time. Go ahead.
And you could see the commercial that has this specific scene online. It's for Haunted Republic Suicide Bridge. But there was a part in our Gettysburg investigation where I believe I was attacked by a demonic entity. I was choked, and at one point, and you see this during the commercial. So, if you don't want to pay $1 a month for awesome stuff, one, that's your
Okay.
loss. Secondly, you'll see in the commercial that I puke in front of everyone,
I
and
was
it's
at I've been
not
at Gettysburg twice. What part of Gettysburg were you at? Where did this
the
happen?
suicide bridge. It's near the Wicked Tree between the Grove.
Let me ask something. Because and I'm going to interrupt you really quick. And this happened like maybe 10 years ago. Was at Gettysburg, and one time we will go to a 7-Eleven. Which, by the way, I don't know now, but before Gettysburg, after dark, everything kind of closes down.
Still the case.
Still the case, right?
They
I mean, I was there like four or
closed down
five
the
years ago,
McDonald's.
but
It's
I went
crazy.
passing through, and we pull into a little 7-Eleven kind of store, and there's some ghost hunters there, local ghost hunters there. I mean, I wasn't there ghost hunting. I just happened to be there. And they said, "Hey, you want to come with us to this bridge?" But it wasn't, it was supposedly attached to a bridge where a lady had committed suicide. And I don't know if that's what you're talking about because it wasn't. Everything in Gettysburg is usually attached to the Civil War. And we went
These
along with
were,
them. But is that what you're talking about?
yes, but the thing about this bridge specifically is that all of the documented entities that professional investigators have been able to kind of tag, so to speak,
Yeah.
they're all post-Civil War. They actually believe a lot of these spirits and entities came in the late 90s when more of the activity started being
Yes.
encountered.
Yes, I had an experience like that at the hotel I stayed at.
Yeah, it was they were post-Civil War entities. We believe that there's
Yes.
a demonic presence that lures people to commit suicide because just fun fact about demons, they can't hurt you, but they can make you hurt yourself. But this thing, we had provoked it, and long story short, I had been attacked and I ended up puking in front of God, my father, everyone. And
God.
at one point they're like, "Oh, I want to check that puke. I want to see if it's real." Next thing you know, this one guy comes over, this one woman, it's like, "That's real."
Oh,
They just had
yes.
Indian food too,
I'm gonna
so
take in your word for it.
it was just like holy crap. And you see it like people there's it's called Puke Gate. It's a conspiracy. I saw two people try and start online. It's like, how did Remso fake the puke? And they're like, it's so dumb, but like you see it. Like my brother, he's a terrible human being because instead of helping me, he filmed it all. And it's just like, it's not one of my most glorious moments, but got filmed the process, good or bad. It's the Remso puking episode, essentially. And, it was hilarious in
Let me ask something.
retrospect. It was terrifying.
Did you throw up because you were scared or because you were nauseous? Like, what made you
I
throw up?
thought, Mentally, like in that moment, I could have sworn that my brother was pulling a prank on me and that he jumped on my back and began to choke me. And within a split second, it's like I was able to just look around. I saw that my father was probably about 6 feet away from me, and my brother was on the other end of the bridge.
What?
So I had at least like a good arm's length away from anyone. So as I'm looking around, because I start, and I think you can kind of see it in the film, but I'm saying like, Ryan, Ryan, I thought that he was messing with me. And then like, no one's here. I'm like, what just jumped on my back and what has me in kind of like a chokehold?
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was very fun. It's like my Darth Vader force choke moment. It was
That's
not
like a very
necessarily.
visceral reaction as far as.
That thing hates men. Men who have been there have not been. And it's funny because I had the woman, the lead investigator on the program, to do like a after action episode of the Haunted Republic podcast, which is on Patreon. And she told me that now my father and my brother and I are legends. We're known as the puking family. So,
Oh, lovely.
yeah. So people have been pushed. People have felt nauseous, but nobody has had such violent, reactions as we had. So,
What? That is.
it's crazy.
That's pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Violent? Yep.
Trippy.
Yeah.
Trippy
That
stuff.
is. That is. But you know what? I'm telling you, there's a good chance. I don't think it's a coinkydink that you're. I think that you might have a certain level of sensitivity, Remzo. Because I'm telling you, there's people out there that I'm telling you, they're like what I call like nails. They're so nailed to the earth. I mean, they could be in the most haunted place and nothing. You just. And.
You are not the first person to tell me that. It is something that I have began to look into. I mean, I really started to take it seriously when I started having sleep paralysis occur within the
Okay.
following months. It is something that I'm a bit hesitant to look more into it, but I do believe there's a reason that when I say, I think we need to go to this location or something. I think there's a reason why we've always had activity there.
Good, yeah, you're following your gut instinct.
Yeah, I
Which
think it's
is,
that sixth sense, so to speak.
yes, of course, everybody has a different name for it, but absolutely, yeah, and but just the fact like that when you're there, and if there is something there that you're having these experiences, which are very tactile. I mean, there's people that will tell you, "Oh, I had feelings." Some people have bad dreams before or after. Some people will sometimes hear something or even smells, but something like that's so tactile. That leads me to believe that you are more sensitive than the average person, even though I think most people are have some type of sensitivity, more or less, to a different degree. But you're plus you're, and I have a feeling also that you're very observant. What can I say? Observative person, if not vigilant. You're always on top of what's going on around you, and I think that that helps a lot. You're on top of that.
Thank you. I try and ultimately, what people deserve is the truth. What
Of
people deserve
course,
is
of course.
what people deserve is a look through the lens of not me, but I want them to feel like it's an immersive experience, so to speak, because people crave adventure. People are like, why is a political commentator and a journalist, why the heck are you doing this? And my question was, because people said it was weird that I was, therefore I should probably do it.
Yes, of
So,
course.
yeah, I mean, this is, I'm not gonna get political on you, I promise, but this is the most real news that you're gonna get sometimes.
Yes, no, I agree. I agree. I agree. And you made a very good observation. There's a plethora of shows out there nowadays which it's anything but real. They're very scripted and even though people don't see behind the scenes. So after a while, even though sometimes I look at them just to look at the locations and to get the history, because I am a history buff when it comes to that, after a while it's like,
The
and
only
it's
similarity my show has with any of those is I promise two things. You're probably going to get scared, but you're going to have a fun time.
yeah, of course. Of course. And the thing is this, if you're a paranormal investigator worth your salt, okay, yeah, there are going to be moments when you're going to get scared and your first instinct is to either run away or puke. I'm sorry, I've just had to throw that in there. Sorry.
You're not the first, you won't be the last. Thanks.
But at the end of the day, that's what you're there for. You're not in there like happenstance, like somebody that's just walking around and has this awful experience and they hightail it out of there. When you see some of these investigators run away, you're like, wait a minute, that's what you're supposed to be there for. You know, you're supposed to be there to like confront it or investigate it or find out, you know, was that the wind or was that, what was that? And sometimes you find that lacking in a lot of these shows where, you know, it's almost like, come on, there, the be, have a show a little bit of fortitude here. And I know sometimes in actuality, and I'm not talking here because I've been to plenty of places that it's like nothing's, there's nothing there, nothing's happening, whatever. But I've had encounters myself where I know what's real and what's not. Where it does take intestinal fortitude to stay there and stand your ground and say, okay, I'm going to walk into that room, okay, or I'm going to go down that hallway, even though I feel like running, you know, and going somewhere where there's a lot of light. I know it, but I think that sometimes it's that what do you call it?
I call it like, paranormal LARPing. It's like you get your hoodie, get all your goth friends, and you got to pose for a picture, and you got to go into the place, and you got to lock yourself in for 24 hours, and you last 24 minutes. But there's a really funny SNL skit that came out when Will Ferrell was still doing the George Bush impressions, and he's talking about all the presidential candidates running for like 2016 or something like that. He's like, all these people are all brains and heart and logic, and we need more gut and balls. And I'm like, we just need adventurous people
Yes,
to go into this.
exactly.
And if you don't go into it like wanting that adventure, well, then you're going to run away because you're just a LARPer. If you call yourself a paranormal investigator, investigate.
Of
Sherlock
course.
Holmes didn't stop just because Moriarty threatened him. The character of a story, because everything, life is about a story brand. That's one thing that I figured out. Life is about story arcs. And we, it's, it, it's not just happenstance that happened in literature. I compare a lot of life to literature because it's the narrative that people understand. But there's a
Yes.
reason why it exists in literature. It's because that's actually part of the human experience.
Yes.
I think that these LARPers just need to get their, they need to be like Will Ferrell Bush, just need to be more like gut and balls, and they'll be good with that later.
Or you could go by what something that Louis L'Amour said. He said, "Adventure is another name for trouble."
Exactly. And a little bit of trouble is a little bit of fun.
Of course. It depends what it is. If not, life would be boring. And then what are you going to tell your grandchildren when you're old and you can't get
I'm
into
not.
trouble
I'm
anyway?
going to get to keep the puke story for the rest of my
Oh,
life.
of course. You know, it'll be something like when your parents drag out your baby album and stuff, and or you know, your first grade pictures, things like that.
Well, what's hilarious is that in that situation, as my brother was filming me, my dad is laughing at me. He's like, "Oh, what's going on?" So that's male bonding right there.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know what? Absolutely right. That's a male bonding thing because if a girl vomits, all the other girls are like, "What's wrong? What's wrong?"
We need to leave this place.
Yes,
Hail
you're
Satan or something. I don't know.
right.
Just
Yes,
leave us alone.
your dad probably thought something had upset your stomach, and it was like, "Hey."
He thought it was the Indian food, but he's like, "Why are you bending over like that? You're not that flexible." And I'm like, "Something's on my back." And it
How
was
long did,
not.
let me ask you something, all kidding aside, how long did you have that feeling of something choking you?
It felt forever. Like it
Okay.
like I know it's a very vague term. It felt like it happened for like, hours and hours. When we look at the camera, it only lasted probably around 15 seconds.
Okay.
From the moment you hear me start coughing to when I start like jerking around to when I puke and when I
Okay.
like days, like it was only 15 seconds according to the camera.
Okay. And
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, because I ask, have you had any experiences after you leave? afterwards, either that night or the following days.
The sleep paralysis was pretty consistent for about a month
Okay,
after
wow.
that.
After that experience.
After that experience specifically, I actually did conduct an investigation several weeks later. But it was I'm pretty certain that it was something that was lingering.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of like food poisoning, so to speak. Go to the restaurant, but you leave with the food poisoning.
Yeah.
The sleep paralysis was something like I'd never encountered before, because I had a really bad, a really it was a very life-altering concussion about a year ago. So I had already been on certain medications to help me sleep
Right.
and deal with pain and stuff like that. So I was used to my REM cycle
Right.
already being a little bit in flux, but there were moments where it's like I'm replaying a specific scene from the bridge or somewhere else where, I
Okay.
can tell it's kind of like a flashback, but it's not, because people are wearing different clothes or people are in
Really?
different positions from what I remember. And there are just things that happen where it's like it's happening. I'm like, wait a second, that did not happen. And it's
Okay.
like I know I'm in a dream, and I'm like, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. And I could feel myself kind of like trapped in myself. I'm just trying to like
Yeah.
physically like shake or jostle, and I can't wake up.
Wow. And when that thing was on your back, and I know I'm going to say thing, did you ever get a sense? Was it human, non-human? Was it male? Was it female?
It felt like I thought it was my brother. I thought it was my brother,
Okay.
trying to freak me out so that way we could get more Patreon pledgers. It's like, watch Rebzo flip his crap. It's like I thought he was being a
Okay.
jerk, so I was mad. I felt like it was my brother. But quickly I look over and I'm like, wait a second, that's not my brother. That's not
So
my dad.
basically, what you're saying is that as strong as it was, you were thinking this has to be a man that's basically grabbed me around the neck.
I'm a pretty burly guy. I'm not saying I'm Chuck Norris or anything, but you've got to be a guy at least like equal to my stature. Like I'm
Okay.
6 foot. Like you've got to actually like be around my stature to try and take me out or something. With that, I felt like it was, and my brother is actually taller than me. Ryan's actually taller than me. And if anyone has seen producer Ryan, that in the first film, St. Albans, he's trying to get a sponsorship from Brickhouse Nutrition. So, just saying if they're watching
Okay.
this. But no, like I thought it was my brother because it had to have been someone that was like equal build, equal or stronger than myself. And it was just, I was convinced it was him, and it wasn't. And it wasn't my dad either. My dad's a lethal weapon. Okay, my dad's a career army guy. Like he could mess someone up. So I'm thinking, okay, it's got to be one of them, but it's not. And that was actually scarier, because I would almost rather it have been a prank.
So you mentioned that one of the ghost hunters said that males are the ones that are attacked at this bridge. Do they have any likely suspects as to who they think it is that attacks men when they go there?
They think it's a demonic entity that, according to local legend and stuff, lures people in and tells them to jump.
Oh.
Yeah, we're dealing with a really screwed up thing there.
Okay, but there's no I guess story behind why men are the targets though. It's just
No, they it's they've been. Like this area, that bridge specifically, has been a location for investigators for over 27 years now,
Okay.
and they don't know why. They think it's because men provide kind of like an antagonistic
Okay.
aura, and
Okay.
because of that, because it's being challenged on its own turf, it wants to get into, like a peeing contest, so to speak. So, because of that, it has to bring men down a notch.
And nobody knows that the origin of it or how it was happened to start affecting this
They
bridge.
do know that several within the last 2 years there was an incident where a couple teenagers went and burned a Ouija board. I think it was under the bridge or somewhere on the
Okay.
other end of that. And from there, people started seeing people, like actual physical apparitions started to appear. Voices started to tune up. I mean,
Okay.
Like the stuff began, like people knew something was there, but it wanted to be known.
Okay.
So I think, you know, just based off my limited knowledge and experience, I think what it did was it opened up a door that should not have been opened.
Okay.
And it used the tragedies of what happened there. Like there was like a triple suicide at one point with three high schoolers.
Right. And the reason why I ask this is that I've come across story scenarios where you've had somebody, a suicidal person, let's say in this case a man, we're going to go with a man thing, commit suicide, but somehow or other he missed the part where he's actually successful. So the spirit, whether you want to call it a demon or a male spirit, I don't know what's going on there. Basically, they try to reenact. They're still trying to complete the suicide, so they try to take over, in this case, another man, to do it. They kind of missed the part where, hey, whatever you're trying to do, you did kill yourself. So they kind of try to do that I want that driving, like what you described, where they drive people.
Potentially. I mean, I have no definitive evidence, but I could definitely that's a good argument.
Yeah, I've heard of that happening where especially they say sometimes that happens, especially when there's suicides that are unsuspected, you know, where people that commit suicide are like, everybody's like totally baffled, like, why would this person do this? This was so unexpected. I've heard, or in certain places like
You know, it's like when the football captain and the prom queen end up, you know, shooting each other or something like that. It's like, what happened?
Exactly. And that's one of the theories that floats out there. But anyway, Remzo, thank you so much for spending this time. I think it was fantastic. I think you're onto something great. And I'm looking forward to looking at all your episodes of Haunted Republic, because believe me, I'm always looking for the new and refreshing angle when it comes to the paranormal, the supernatural. And especially if you're going to places that are new. When I say new as a new, maybe they've been haunted, but they really have not been in the public eye per se. And see what happens out there. I think it's great. And I wish you all the luck in the world.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
So take care and have a fantastic night. And again, thank you so much.
No problem. Bye.
Bye-bye. So guys, what did you think? I loved it. And I know everybody's thinking, you love everybody, Marlene. Yes, I do. How can I tell you? I have a soft spot for fellow paranormal enthusiasts. But one of the things that I like about Remzo's encounter with the paranormal, or his decision to go forward with investigating other locations, was that initially when he went on the first investigation that he went to, which was St. Albans, which is it's a sanitarium out in Virginia. Very similar history to a lot of sanitariums, that they were reform schools, that sometimes they have people that are mentally ill. It has a history of, you know, of housing humans under the most dire and tragic circumstances. So it's a given, like I told them, that when you go there, if not active, you're going to get residual stuff. But anyway, he went in there basically trying to debunk it. He was not going in there as in, I want to find something, you know, something he said. He's the captain of the ship, or him and his brother are the captains of the ship. They don't have a producer or a company telling him, you better find something out there. You better make it exciting. You blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's entertaining. But from what I understand, he went out there on that first one thinking, okay, we're going to get all this material. And great, but he didn't have any expectations. As a matter of fact, he was kind of leaning towards at the end of the night, we're going to go and run around this dark sanitarium or whatever in the dark. And we're not going to have anything to show for it that's supernatural. And he had an experience. And I'm going to tell you something. That in and of itself is priceless. And And this, I think, was what I was trying to tell him. Even if you didn't capture it on the camera, even if you didn't, you know, couldn't produce proof like, hey, this is what I felt when I was in that boiler room where all of a sudden I felt that I was confronted with something malevolent. Because how can you translate what you're feeling in whatever part of your body, your senses, that this is what it is? Basically, you have to take the person's word for it. But for your own inner belief system, once you cross that threshold, okay, especially when you deal in the paranormal, it's like whatever you do afterwards, whether it's to capture evidence for entertainment purposes, when I say entertainment purposes, because you're trying to produce a show, whatever the case might be, there's something there that you're going to do it anyway because you had that moment, you had that feeling. There's something in your mind, in your head that clicked, that told you this is real. And maybe, you know, later on you'll have another experience. Well, you'll have another confirmation. You'll run another type of evidence. But like I said, once you have that experience, it's, believe me, you know very easily how to distinguish between that and either residual or fake stuff, or the wind, or whatever. You know, your standards become different, and you pursue it, but with a different mindset. With a different mindset. And this has nothing whatsoever to do with what he was talking about, that, you know, he learned a lot from his first experience as far as shooting angles and lighting and all of that. You know, we're talking here the practical part of producing something. Okay, I'm talking about the approach or that experience that he had on the bridge. Folks, I've been doing this for a long time. Okay? And luckily, and I'm going to say luckily, and I'm going to underline that, I have never had something as violent or as tactile as something that was choking me and that I felt was on my back. Okay? And that made me throw up because basically I'm either between what's choking me and the milliseconds in your mind when you realize it's not my father, it's not my brother, there's nobody around me. So what is got me in a chokehold? Okay. Luckily, I've never had that experience, and I hope never to have it. Believe me. When you have those experiences, your mindset is totally different as to what you produce, or how you pursue it, because you know what's real and what's not. You've had that experience. You're on the other side of it now. You're one of us. You're what I call now a true a believer. That's what I call a true believer. And talking about true believers, okay, which again, I loved. I'm going to put a credit, a link to. I'm sorry, in the credits you'll have a link to Remzo's website. You want to check it out. Obviously, he has special access for his Patreon, you know, people that participate with him in Patreon. But talking about true believers, I'm looking for true believers, okay? And what I'm hoping for is that because I constantly get a lot of stories sent to me via email, so much so that it's just beyond me. So what I'm hoping for is if you could tape yourself and send it to me. You know, videotape yourself with your phone, with your camera. If you want to do it just audio and send me an MP3 file, that is fine. Because it's easier for me. I'll include it in my shows. And it's just, there's something different when somebody tells you the story versus when they write it. Some people are really good about descriptions and you get it, but there's others that I know that there would be just more to the story if they were telling me, like telling me. So by all means, please go to miamighostchronicles.com. You can submit it there. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, and just send me your film. You know, send me the film, and just don't worry about it. Just tell me the story. Like if you're talking to anybody, just don't worry about whether it's believable, because I've heard everything. Believe me, I'm shockproof, and I will believe anything because I've heard it all. Take my word for it. So send it to me, and I look forward to it. And like I said, I would love to include it in all the shows, and it's going to help me tremendously versus going through a bunch of emails, which is what I'm doing right now. So again, guys, I hope you like this show. Please subscribe to my channel. Please hit the like button for the show. I'm also releasing podcasts of the show because I've had so much demand for it. You can download it on my website. You can find us on iTunes, on iHeartRadio, on Spreaker. You can find me all over the place with a podcast version for those of you who would like to listen to the show versus looking at it. So guys, take care. Thank you so much for viewing and listening.